All right. Hello, everyone. Hopefully I sound okay. I decided, usually when I teach, I sit over there at my desk all professional-like with my fancy microphone and fancy speakers. And today I just felt like relaxing a little more, so I'm sitting back on the sofa, which means I just have the laptop here. So it's a little different, but, you know, it's a more relaxed way of being rather than sitting at the desk. And, yeah, we are here for the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi. Yeah, I'm on the purple sofa. Yeah, Cheryl knows the spot. Yeah, exactly. So I'm sitting back relaxing today. So I am going to try and play a song, even though I don't have my fancy speakers. Hopefully the song. Whoops. Oops. I just got kicked out of Pal Talk. Oh, no. Oh, let's see. Okay.
Okay, letting go of Virginia.
Hi, yeah, I got kicked out of the room. It said that somebody else was using my login name. And last night I was logged in on Ken's computer in my name. So he may have just popped into Pal Talk as me real quick or something. And when that happened, there's not supposed to be two me's in the room. it happened to you guys too. Well, maybe then it's just a fluke. I don't know, but I got kicked right out. So that's what happened. Hopefully it won't happen again. But as I mentioned, I'm going to try playing a song. So this song is from my YouTube inspiration playlist, which maybe some of you guys listen to from time to time. I've made it publicly available, and it's linked to the Loving Consciousness Meditation audios in case you want to listen to a heart-opening song prior to meditating. So some of you might be familiar with this. This particular song is called Soul on Fire. It's a Christian song, but it's, you know, it's really about increasing that desire for liberation. So here we go. Soul on Fire.
Till I am a soul on fire, Lord, I'm longing for your love.
That's it. Hope you guys were able to hear that okay. Today, in the spiritual teaching of Ramana Maharshi, I am beginning on page 19 on the section that is called practice. So we have a question, and the question is, what is the method of practice? And this is the answer. As the true self of a person who tries to attain self-realization is not different from him, and as there is nothing other than or superior to him to be attained by him, self-realization, being only the realization of one's own nature, the seeker of liberation realizes without doubts or misconceptions his real nature by distinguishing the eternal from the transient and never swerves from his natural state. This is known as the practice of knowledge. This is the inquiry leading to self-realization. One thing whenever I read Ramana Maharshi, I always think, and I don't know if this is true or not, but I always think he must have been a very intelligent man. He seems to speak, with great intelligence rather than with great simplicity, right? So this was a very long way of saying, that the primary practice is learning to distinguish between that which changes, that which has a beginning and an end, that which comes and goes, and that which does not change, that which is always the same. And then abiding in, and as he says, never swerving from, that natural state, which is the changeless. So, one aspect of ourself that I have noticed, which I suppose we could call it to some degree the culprit of ignorance, one aspect of ourself that I have noticed is what I call attention. I've looked very, very carefully at attention, and attention does not appear to be a mental thought. For example, I can have the thought, I want to relax today. I'm going to sit on the sofa while I teach. Right? That's a thought. Attention is what gives that thought credence. I'm sure I've had other thoughts today that I did not give credence to. The thought came, I looked at it, decided it wasn't important, it didn't matter, and the thought went on and it has since been forgotten. But the idea today that I wanted to relax and I wanted to sit back on the purple sofa while I teach, I gave that thought credence. I gave that thought value, and therefore I followed that thought, and as a result I'm sitting on the purple sofa. So when I look to see what is that I, what is that I that gave that thought credence? What I find is attention. Attention went to that thought and stayed with that thought until it manifests in the form of me sitting on the purple sofa teaching. So when Ramana Maharshi says, as the self, and this is a capital S. Now, of course, the translator did that. You know, Ramana Maharshi was just speaking. But the translator hopefully had an understanding. And Ramana Maharshi said, as the self, and this is a capital S, as the self of a person who tries to attain self-realization, is not different from him. And as there is nothing other than or superior to him to be attained by him, comma, I won't go any further at this point. But you know, you have to ask this question, what is this self of a person that is not different from what I really am? It's not thought. But might it be attention? Could attention be what Ramana Maharshi is referring to as the self of the person, which is not different from the self and self-realization? It's not superior to him. What I have done is I have, you know, kind of watched attention, put attention on attention. And I've looked to see what attention is. And the only thing that I can really discover, and this is just based on my own investigation, attention seems to be awareness. But it's almost as if there's a general resting awareness that is always present, always open, always general rather than specific, always general and always resting. And then attention seems to be some aspect of awareness that kind of moves. I think of it sometimes as the arm of awareness, you know, where awareness itself is like a still body. But the arm is moving, or maybe it'd be like the trunk on the elephant, right? Awareness would be the elephant, but the trunk is moving. And so that trunk or that arm, that's like attention. The trunk of an elephant is no different than the elephant, right? It's made up of the elephant. The trunk of the elephant is made up of the elephant. The arm of the body is no different from the body. It's made up of the body. Attention is no different than awareness. It's made up of awareness. And yet, just as the trunk can move, the arm can move, attention seems to move. Attention can go to a thought, give value to a thought until that thought becomes manifest in some form. Or attention can disregard a thought and the thought does not become manifest. So attention, I think, is what Ramana Maharshi is referring to when he says the self with a capital S, the self of a person, right? It's different than the false self, which is the thinking, right? The chattering is the false self. But attention makes the false self seem real if attention has interest in it, if attention stays focused there. And at the same time, attention can ignore the false self, give all of its attention to the true self, and then the false self has no value, no meaning at all. So attention seems to be the self of a person. Right? That's the part of the person that is an extension of the person's truth rather than being pure falsehood like thought. And so again, the question is, what is the method of practice? And Ramana Maharshi says, as the self of a person, who tries to attain self-realization is not different from him. So that's like saying as attention, which is attempting to realize infinite awareness, is not different than awareness. Right? Attention, which is trying to realize infinite awareness, is not different from awareness. And as there is nothing other than or superior to him to be attained by him, there is nothing other than awareness or superior to awareness to be attained by this aspect of awareness that we call attention. Self-realization being only the realizing of one's nature. In other words, attention, which is made up of awareness. Self-realization is attention realizing it is awareness. And attention is the part of us, the part of our true self that has forgotten this. Because since attention can move about and can go into thought and get completely lost in the world of thought, attention can forget what it is. It can forget that it's awareness. So it isn't really the false self or thought. It isn't thought that wakes up to self-realization. It's attention. It's attention that realizes it isn't thought. It isn't the thought that it's covered itself up in. It is awareness. It realizes its nature. That is the self of the person. And that is the part that awakens. So self-realization being only the realization of one's own nature, the seeker of liberation realizes, and the seeker is attention. Now the mind, you know, thought can act like the seeker, right? I'm sure that we all have all kinds of thoughts about our desire to awaken, our resistance to awaken, how well we're doing in our practice to awaken, whether we're going to practice more or less today, et cetera, et cetera. Thought can have all kinds of ideas about awakening. But that's no different than what thought does all the time. It's a commentator. Thought can comment on the awakening process, just like thought can comment on walking across the kitchen and opening the refrigerator and grabbing something to eat, right? That's what thought does. Thought comments. It's a chatterbox. But even though thought comments on seeking, thought is not the actual seeker. It's only the commentator. The seeker is attention. The seeker of liberation realizes, without doubts or misconceptions, his real nature by, and this is the answer to the question, what is the method of practice? Realizes his real nature by distinguishing the eternal from the transient. That's the first step. Yeah, I'm going to read what Julian has written. He says, when attention loses interest in the story, the thoughts tell it, it sinks back, and what remains is pure awareness. Exactly. When attention loses interest in the story that the thoughts tell it, it sinks back, and what remains is pure awareness. Yeah, attention is the seeker, and attention is the one that has become, for lack of better words, lost, because it went out, right? It went out and it lost awareness of what it is. And yet it's still made up of awareness. It's never anything but awareness. So this is saying that the path of awakening for attention, which is the self of the human, right? The path of awakening for attention is to distinguish the eternal from the transient. That's the first step. I'll talk about the second step next. But the first step is for attention, to distinguish the eternal from the transient. And attention can do this by paying attention. And of course, since paying attention is what attention is good at, this shouldn't be that hard. What attention does is it just notices. It notices what has a beginning, what has an ending, what comes, what goes, and what always stays. Attention pays attention, and attention notices. And just think about how attention can do that. Think about what attention is. Attention is a noticer, right? Attention is a watcher. Attention is an observer, right? So attention can pay attention and notice the difference between the transient, that which comes and goes, and what is always here. And what is always here is attention's source. It's like the body to the trunk of the elephant, or like the body to the arm. It's general awareness. General awareness is the source of attention. And so attention can begin to notice that there's this general awareness that doesn't move about, right? It's just always present. It's always still. And it never changes. Attention can become aware of that. And then attention has the ability to distinguish. Once attention becomes aware of the still awareness that is always present, attention then knows the difference between that which comes and goes, which is all of manifestation, including all of thought and emotion, and that which remains the same, which is still general awareness. Still, comma, general, meaning non-specific awareness. So again, the first step for attention to awaken is to distinguish the eternal from the transient. Then the second step for attention to awaken is, and never swerves from his natural state. That is what we call awareness watching awareness meditation. That is attention staying fixed on non-moving awareness. You could almost call it attention resting in its source. In fact, you could call it that. Attention resting in its source. It's kind of like, you know, like if you think of your arm's been out here tasting different things, right? Reaching out and feeling this and touching that, right? It's when your arm comes back and just rests on your chest. That's awareness watching awareness. The arm is no longer out there. It comes back and it just rests on its chest. And Ramana Maharshi says, this is known as the practice of knowledge. It's knowledge because it's the opposite of ignorance. Ignorance is when attention is out in thought, emotion, and the world, thinking that's reality, that's what matters, that's what's happening, right? That's ignorance. Knowledge is when attention realizes really what's happening is awareness. That it's the only thing eternal, it's the only thing real, and attention comes home and rests there. And we can call that resting with itself because attention is made up of awareness. So yeah, Julian is saying one step allows attention to see the consequences of going outwards, and then attention learns to sink back into its source. And then he says, or maybe it's allows itself rather than learns, allows itself to sink back into its source. Ramana says, this is known as the practice of knowledge. Ramana also says this is the inquiry leading to self-realization. This is the inquiry. And we have seen before, I think primarily through the seven steps to awakening, and I remember discussing it in the Michael Langford study group. I don't remember if I've said it here in this particular group, the Guiding Light. But we've seen before the inquiry is not actually the question, what am I or who am I? We think of that as inquiry. You know, it makes sense. It's a question. Inquiry means question. But Ramana Maharshi and his devotees say that that's not the actual inquiry. The actual inquiry is the self-attention. Attention, paying attention to awareness. By attention, paying attention to awareness, it learns or remembers or realizes truth. The self-attention itself is inquiry. The question, who am I or what am I, is just a mental tool that we use in order to direct our attention towards the self. But the actual inquiry is the self-attention. So now that I've gone through and kind of talked about all of this, what I'll do is just read the question and the answer again. And I'm just reading what Julian has written again. Makes perfect sense. The ego wants to continue, so it creates all kinds of tricks to keep attention outward. So effort is needed to see what's going on. Yeah, and the inquiry is the effort, right? What am I? Who am I? Turns the attention around. That's the effort. All right. Once the effort is made to turn around, by the way, though, again, it's like the arm coming back and resting on the chest, then we rest in awareness. So the effort is required to turn attention around, but once attention has come and kind of surrendered to being turned around, then we can just rest attention in awareness. So here's the question. What is the method of practice? And the answer. As the self of a person who tries to attain self-realization is not different from him, and as there is nothing other than or superior to him to be attained by him, self-realization being only the realization of one's own nature, the seeker of liberation realizes, without doubts or misconceptions, his real nature by distinguishing the eternal from the transient and never swerves from his natural state. This is known as the practice of knowledge. This is the inquiry leading to self-realization. All right, question number two. Can this path of inquiry be followed by all aspirants? And here is the answer. This is suitable only for the ripe souls. The rest should follow different methods according to the state of their minds. And I have known people who have said that's not true. You know, like there's no such thing as a ripe soul. Everybody's ripe. But I will tell you just from my own personal experience, that's not true. At least it wasn't true for me. When I first began the spiritual path, although now it's incredibly obvious, when I first began the spiritual path, I did not know what awareness was. I really didn't. How could I pay attention to awareness when I didn't know what awareness was? And it seems like that should be elementary, but maybe some of you listening actually still don't know what it is either. Right? It's funny because it is incredibly obvious and always here. But the attention can be so lost in thought, so engrossed in thought, that the thought is like a veil. Which covers the obvious, which hides the obvious. And so in my particular case, when I first began the spiritual path as a serious spiritual aspirant, it had nothing to do with awareness watching awareness. It was all about purification, all about learning not to be interested in thought. And I started with the thoughts that were most painful, right? I learned to stop believing and therefore free myself from thoughts like, the I am bad thought, self-hatred, rejection, betrayal, the idea that I could just be used by someone, fear of an imaginary future. Right, all of these things I learned to lose interest in, but it took great effort because I believed these things. I thought these things were true, so it took great effort before I learned to just not be interested. And in fact, that part of my path, which I know I've told you all before, that part of my path took about 5 years. I started actually in April of 2004, and it was around April-ish, could have been May, but it was around April of 2009, so exactly 5 years later, when I had my first realization of what awareness was, when I really glimpsed it, really noticed it. I mean, right here, right now, noticed awareness is what I am. And that came about right after the teachings of Inner Ramana came to me, it was before the teachings of Inner Ramana came to me. I take that back. But some initial messages had come that were teaching me the I am that mantra, and I was practicing the I am that mantra. So it was April or May of 2009. Or was that 2008? I think that was 2008, so it would have been 4 years instead of 5 years. That was 2008. When I practiced the mantra and had that first glimpse. I'm pretty sure, but it's not important. We'll say 4 to 5 years, because you know how memory can be wrong. The point is, I had to become ripe. And even after I first knew what awareness was, then I did go into the practice of learning to pay attention to awareness more, but it was short glimpses, like after saying the mantra, I am that I am, and then just lingering for a few seconds. It's kind of like that old Bentinho teaching. Bentinho Massaro has a teaching that he used to focus on several years ago more. It's that teaching of taking breaks, 2 to 5 second breaks, many times throughout the day to notice that you are awareness. That's really what I did. And I did that for a number of years. So whether it was 2008 or 2009 when I first began to glimpse awareness, then I practiced glimpsing, and of course glimpsing became easier and easier with practice. I practiced glimpsing up until, I think, May of 2015. Seems like the spring is an important time for me. I do think it was 2015. I could be mistaken, and it could be 2014. So again, I could be off by a year. But that is when I began communicating directly with Michael Langford through email, and he brought the Loving Consciousness Method of Meditation to me. We could probably just open that book and see when it was published, and we'd know when that happened. How to Live a Life That Knows Only Love is the book. But prior to publishing the book, he started talking to me in email about the Loving Consciousness Method, and I started practicing Loving Consciousness Meditation, which I consider my form of awareness watching awareness. And that's when I began to really begin to pay more attention to self-attention for longer periods of time, meaning a minimum of half an hour on short practice days, and sometimes 2 hours, 2.5. I don't know if I've gone 3 hours yet. 2, 2.5 usually are my longest. So if we say that I began in 2004, began the spiritual path, and then it was 2015 before I was really ready to meditate for even half an hour of awareness, resting in awareness, which is, again, that self-attention is self-inquiry. Well, I'd say a ripening occurred, wouldn't you? That's 11 years. And until I went through the previous 11 years and the stages that I went through, I really wasn't ready for sitting in self-attention meditation, awareness, watching awareness, or loving consciousness. So I, you know, from my own personal experience, agree that, you know, maybe not everybody's ready for awareness, watching awareness, or loving consciousness. You know, maybe there's some other things that people need to go through first before they're ready. So again, the question was, can this path of inquiry be followed by all aspirants? And Ramana's answer was, this is suitable only for the ripe souls. The rest should follow different methods according to the state of their minds. And I just mentioned some different methods that I practiced, right? I practiced letting go of false beliefs. I practiced a mantra, I am that I am, along with many glimpses of awareness throughout the day, right? I practiced other methods. Well, then the questioner says, what are the other methods? And Ramana lists five. He said, and we'll go through each one of these separately. But he says there are stuti, japa, dhyana, yoga, yanana, and so forth, which means there must be others, but these must be the prior ones. So now we'll go through each of these other methods. And again, these other methods are for people who are not yet ready for self-attention or awareness, watching awareness, also known as self-inquiry. Right? This is for people who just aren't ready for that yet. It's preparation. So the first one is stuti. And this is singing the praises of the Lord with a great feeling of devotion. And I would say, even though this is helping you to become ripe, that even if you are ripe enough to practice awareness, watching awareness, this might still be a good practice to help increase that desire for liberation, right? So that maybe you start spending even more time in awareness, watching awareness meditation, because you want to so deeply. So it's a practice that helps increase your desire. In fact, it's like the song that we played at the beginning, right? And in fact, this particular song, the lyrics version is in my inspiration playlist because I like to play this song and I like to sing it out loud, reading the lyrics and sing it out loud because it does increase my desire. That is stuti. Let me come back to the song for just a second. I think I still have it open. No, but I can get back to it. I'm not going to play the whole song, but in case you weren't listening to the lyrics before, I want to go ahead and play a little bit of the song for you again. And look how the song can really help to increase our desire. Here we go. The name of the song is Soul on Fire. The band is Third Day. Here we go. God, I'm running for your heart. I'm running for your heart. Till I am a soul on fire. Lord, I'm longing for your ways. I'm waiting for the day. Till I am a soul on fire. Till I am a soul on fire. See, I'll stop it there. My voice isn't the greatest, but you can tell that if you just set, these songs have a lot of heart to them, right? A lot of heart. You know, I'm longing for your heart. I'm running for your ways until I am a soul on fire. And you just sing that and it increases your own desire. And this helps to ripen you, or if you're already somewhat ripe, prepare you for even more. And, you know, in the minister preparation program, one of the classes that we teach is Kabbalah. And this is also a practice in Kabbalah, singing inspirational songs in order to increase your desire for liberation. So that's Ramana's first answer is to another method. Stuti is singing the praises of the Lord with a great feeling of devotion. Now the second one, japa. Japa is uttering the names of the gods or sacred mantras like Om, either mentally or verbally. And of course, any of you that are familiar with the teachings of Inner Ramana, you know the mantra, I am that I am, is a very important part of that teaching. And again, it was through saying the mantra, I am that I am, that I began to get my first glimpses of awareness and realize what that was. Ramana Maharshi continues, while following the methods of stuti and japa, the mind will sometimes be concentrated or closed and sometimes diffused or open. The vagaries of the mind will not be evident to those who follow these methods. So, you know, the way, I don't know exactly what he means here. But I will talk about my experience. And my experience was that, you know, sometimes when singing a song, you can actually be singing a song and still thinking about something else, right? Or you can be saying a mantra and still thinking about something else. So that's probably when the mind is diffused. It's not, I'm going to just look up the word diffused, even though I think I know what it means. But I would say concentrated is really paying attention. That's what I would say, paying attention to the song you're singing or the mantra you're saying. And diffused would be not paying attention, but let's just look. Yeah, diffuse is to spread over a wide area, right? To spread over a wide area, so scattered. So he's saying that sometimes, you know, when you're practicing this, sometimes your mind will be scattered. You'll be saying a mantra and actually thinking about what you got to do tomorrow at the same time, or singing a song and thinking about, you know, what happened just before you started singing the song, right? But other times you'll be concentrated. And of course, as we all can imagine, that times when we're really concentrated on the mantra or concentrated on the song, that's where the benefit is going to come from. All right, so the third practice, dhyana. Dhyana denotes the repetition of the names mentally, meaning japa, with feelings of devotion. In this method, the state of mind will be understood easily. For the mind does not become concentrated and diffused simultaneously. When one is in dhyana, it does not contact the objects of the senses. And when it is in contact with the objects, it is not in dhyana. Therefore, those who are in this state can observe the vagaries of the mind then and there, and by stopping the mind from thinking other thoughts, fix it in dhyana. Perfection in dhyana is the state of abiding in the self. So the way that the word dhyana is typically translated into English is devotion. So someone who is practicing dhyana or practicing devotion still sings praises to the Lord and still says mantras, probably also prays and practices surrender. These are probably the primary practices, the singing of songs of praise. They might dance too, actually. Some people, I think, in dhyana really dance to music as a form of devotion. But I think typically we're talking about singing, saying mantras, praying, and surrendering. But what he is saying is there's something a little more mature about these practices when it's coming from an absolute love of the Lord, whatever the Lord is to you. When it's coming from that absolute love of the Lord, because you want so much to be merged into your Lord, so much you want to lose yourself in your Lord. That is the goal of devotion. You want to lose yourself in your Lord. And because you want to lose yourself in your Lord, you are aware when the mind is scattered because it's not what you wanted. You're not just singing a song to sing a song. You're not just saying a mantra to say a mantra. You're attempting to lose yourself. And that intention alone is enough to give you the discernment to notice when your mind has started wandering. And because you want to love so deeply, you bring your mind back and you stay concentrated on your current devotional practice. Sufism is really a great, great form of dhyana. Sufis attempt to lose themselves in devotion. And in fact, Ramana Maharshi says, perfection in dhyana is the state of abiding in the true self. Right? Because you lose the false self. You lose the little self in the big self. You become lost in your love of God. Perfection in dhyana is the state of abiding in the self. And then he goes on to say, as meditation functions in an exceedingly subtle matter as the source of the mind, it is not difficult to perceive its rise or subsidence. Okay, I got to look at that sentence again. As meditation functions in an exceedingly subtle manner at the source of the mind, it is not difficult to perceive its rise and subsidence. So what I gather here, because again, we're still in the paragraph where we're talking about dhyana, is he is equating devotion to meditation. That when you are that deeply devoted to your Lord, you are in effect meditating on your Lord. Right? You're concentrated, you're fixed on your God. And when you are in that form of meditation, because you are so fixed on that love, which is the edge of the mind and the beginning of the heart, which is the source of mind, it is not difficult to notice when the mind becomes active or when the mind is disappearing. You know, it's very, very easy for someone in deep, deep devotion to discern this and therefore to maintain some, pardon my expression, control over it. And by control, I mean just not letting the mind do whatever it wants to do, right? Returning oneself to the devotion. I would say that loving consciousness meditation, I told you that it's my form of awareness, watching awareness, but loving consciousness meditation really, at least for me, has the flavor of dhyana or devotion in it, right? You aren't just watching awareness. You're loving awareness. You know, some of the other words in the loving consciousness descriptions are cherish. You're cherishing awareness. Worship. You're worshiping awareness. So you are like the dhyana devotee, and awareness is your Lord. And you're loving awareness, loving consciousness, adoring consciousness, exactly, being devoted to consciousness. And that's that form of meditation, loving consciousness. All right, the next practice that Ramana Maharshi lists is yoga. And he's not talking about, you know, hatha yoga, which is what we do in the West, right? With the dog, what is it? The dog poses, you know, I forget all the names of them. I just do them. But anyway, he says, the source of the breath is the same as that, yeah, the downward dog, thank you. The source of the breath is the same as that of the mind. Therefore, the subsidence of either leads effortlessly to that of the other. The practice of stilling the mind through breath control is called yoga. The practice of stilling the mind through breath control, which is pranayama, is called yoga. Fixing their minds on psychic centers such as the thousand-petaled lotus, a psychic center. So this would be something that, you know, probably, you know, Hindus know more about, but maybe even some Westerners have taken these yogic meditation courses, and they know what these things mean. It's not anything that I've ever paid attention to, and reading it, I can tell that I probably will never have an interest in it. Yeah, pranayama, exactly. He says, fixing their minds on psychic centers, such as the thousand-petaled lotus, yogis remain any length of time without awareness of their bodies. As long as this state continues, they appear to be immersed in some kind of joy. But when the mind, which has become tranquil, emerges and becomes active again, it resumes its worldly thoughts. It is therefore necessary to train it with the help of practices like dhyana. Whenever it becomes externalized, it will then attain a state in which there is neither subsidence nor emergence. So it's interesting because yoga is a form of control. Right? It's a form of control. And what he is saying is that a form of control by itself will not work. You know, a form of control, it's kind of like, it's kind of like you have a slingshot with a rubber band on it, right? And the form of control is pulling the rubber band back and holding it back. You know, while you're... Is there someone here? I guess not. Sounded like I heard somebody come in. But Jamie's not barking, so sometimes houses just make funny noises. Anyway... it's like pulling the rubber band back, and the whole time you're controlling the breath or you're focusing on a yogic center, you're holding that rubber band back. But you can't sit in that form of control forever. Eventually, you have to get up and go to the bathroom, get something to eat. And when you get up from that form of meditative control, it's like letting go of that rubber band, and it's going to sling forward, right? And that's like the mind coming back. So he's saying that form of practice, although it can be very helpful, or else he wouldn't be listing it, that, you know, learning that form of discipline can help you, for example, to maintain awareness, watching awareness later. Remember, we're talking about becoming ripe. And as we know, A Course in Miracles says that an untrained mind can accomplish nothing. And so here you're definitely training the mind. But he's saying by itself it's not enough, because this is when you get up from the cushion. If you've been using a form of control as your form of meditation, when you get up from the cushion, the mind just comes completely back. So he's recommending to couple it with devotional practice. You know, because devotional practice is not control. Devotional practice is love. Right? It's completely different. It's heart-centered. You love your Lord, or you love awareness. You want to sing to it, pray to it, think of it, right? And so this is what he's recommending. If you use the yogic control called yoga, to couple it with devotion in order to get the best effect. And then the last practice that he is recommending here is Yanana. It is the annihilation of the mind in which it is made to assume the form of the self through the constant practice of either devotion or inquiry. Yanana is the annihilation of the mind in which it is made to assume the form of the self through the constant practice of dhyana or vikara, which is self-inquiry. The extinction of the mind is the state in which there is a cessation of all efforts. Those who are established in this state never swerve from their true state. The terms silence and inaction refer to this state alone. So although he seemed to be describing practices, you know, the first four practices, he seemed to be describing practices that really help you to ripen. This practice is beyond ripening. Here he is describing what Michael Langford calls manonasa. He's describing two practices, which is really interesting because most people say that Ramana Maharshi only taught one practice, self-inquiry. But he's describing two practices, which if you go into them deep enough, it will annihilate the mind. Manonasa. And practicing either of these practices that deeply is what he is calling yanana. I'm just going to look up this word in the glossary and see if they have something else for yanana. Just knowledge. Yanana means knowledge. So he's calling this knowledge then. Knowledge is the annihilation of the mind when attention is completely focused on the self without wavering through either the practice of devotion or inquiry, which we know means self-attention, until the mind is completely extinct. And again, I like loving consciousness. To me, loving consciousness is the marrying of these two, right? He's saying you practice either the dhyana or the inquiry, which we've said is self-attention. But loving consciousness to me marries those two. It marries the devotion and the inquiry or self-attention. So the only trick then, I think that means I'm not sure. But I think the point he's making here, because he's already mentioned dhyana. In fact, he's mentioned dhyana three times now. He mentioned dhyana by itself, and then he mentioned dhyana as coupling that with yoga. And now he's mentioning dhyana as one of the final practices, right, that takes you all the way to manonasa. But I think the difference between the dhyana that was mentioned previously and the dhyana that is mentioned here and called yanana is the all-inclusiveness of it, right? This is when, you know, you are just staying there all of the time. You are not leaving devotion and returning to self-will for some hours of the day. You are staying in that devotion. You are merging into your God, paying attention to your God all of the time. Spending hours maybe in loving consciousness meditation. And when you're not in loving consciousness meditation, you're still saying a mantra or you're praying or you're surrendering. You're all consumed with this. Or you're all consumed with inquiry. When you're in meditation, in the awareness, watching awareness, you're totally focused on awareness, watching awareness. You're doing this hours a day because you want to. But when you're not in meditation, when you're up doing other common things, you're still within your mind practicing self-inquiry. You're still paying attention. Who sees this thought? What notices that activity? You're constantly reflecting your attention on self-attention. So Yanana is being totally immersed in one of these two practices, or if you can, the two of them together, until the mind is totally annihilated. Now, there are some notes here, and the notes are fairly long. So when I return, which will be 2 weeks from today, because next Wednesday, by the way, the sanctuary is closed because it's the day before Thanksgiving. So we're closing the sanctuary so that our staff and teachers can cook or travel or whatever they need to do. So it'll be 2 weeks from today when I'm back. So when I come back in 2 weeks, I'll give a brief review of these practices, and then I'll read the two notes about these practices. But for now, I'm done. So let's see. I guess I will see most of you all probably on Sunday, but if you're not here Sunday or Monday, no, I won't be here next Monday. I'll be here Sunday, and that's it. So if I don't see you on Sunday, happy Thanksgiving. Otherwise, see you on Sunday. Oh, tonight. That's right. I teach tonight, too, or we all teach. Michael Langford Study Group. Thanks for reminding me. So see you tonight for Michael Langford Study Group. Bye.